This is an ABC podcast.
When I opened TikTok this week, there was this fake video edited to show the former New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, dancing at a club. TikTok is just one place where there are a lot of people with love for her. On this episode of Hack, we're going to talk about why young people are stanning their state leaders and what that means for accountability. Because let's be honest, Gladys Berejiklian is being investigated for corruption. Hello, Avani Dias here. And later on this episode, the federal government has approved a third new coal project in just 1 month. And we're a few weeks away from a major climate conference where Australia will continue to be pushed to eradicate carbon emissions. We're going to talk to the scientist who says we can lower emissions by electrifying everything. And we're going to hear from young people who've been to prison and aren't being supported when they get out.
Hack. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody.
I liked her. I thought she was great. She did an amazing job.
On Triple Jack.
There's now a new premier in New South Wales after Gladys Berejiklian stepped down over a corruption investigation. But if your information is purely from TikTok, then you probably have no idea, because there are Gladys stans making fake videos of her dressed in raunchy outfits, grinding at the club. And throughout the pandemic, we've seen WA Premier Mark McGowan being called the state's daddy. There are the Dan Andrews stans. So are young people just blindly trusting politicians, even the ones accused of corruption? I want to know your thoughts. Do you like your premier more since the pandemic started? Are you massively fanning them on social media? 1300 0555 36, call me. Meghna Bali has this story.
In a TikTok I can never unsee, former Premier Gladys Berejiklian is seen seductively dancing and wearing glamorous dresses on a runway. In another video, Baddie Gladdy is surrounded by stylists as she gets ready for her last press conference as Premier. Both videos, which have superimposed Miss Berejiklian's face onto clips from Bollywood films and Keeping Up with the Kardashians, have clocked more than 2 million views since they were posted last Friday.
Some people love them, some people find them really funny, and they can see them for what they are, which is just a joke. Some people sort of hate on them.
This is Angus Dunnicky. He's a 22-year-old from Sydney's Northern Beaches and the guy behind these viral TikToks.
During lockdown, I've had a lot of like free time, so I started making a few more TikToks, and the ones that would kind of pick up a bit of speed would be all political or COVID-related.
Angus isn't the only one.
I think Gladys is going to wear burgundy.
I'm going for Gladys wearing pink and maroon.
Definitely orange.
Earlier this year, we saw other Sydney-siders making TikToks crowning Miss Berejiklian the ultimate hashtag girl boss for the way she handled the pandemic. Someone even nicknamed her, I shit you not, Daddy Gladdy.
I personally think Gladys has done an incredible job taking care of New South Wales throughout COVID. I mean, look, no one is perfect. I agree with a lot of her viewings on things in terms of trying to keep state borders open and also trying to get Australians home. So I have nothing but complete respect for all the hard work that she's done, and I think she's done really well.
Angus says he was pretty devo when Miss Berejiklian announced her resignation on Friday.
I was quite sad to hear that she was resigning, because like I said, I think in the last 2 years, she's done an incredible job. And it is hard to think that, you know, one thing that you've done can sort of undermine all of your hard work.
That one thing is allegations of corruption. ICAC, the New South Wales corruption watchdog, is investigating whether there was a breach of public trust and a conflict between Miss Berejiklian's public duties and private life when she was in a relationship with former MP Daryl Maguire.
What we're seeing over the last couple of years, of course, is the premiers being so important to the day-to-day lives of individuals. And I think that's where that connection is coming in.
Dr. Zare Gazarian is a senior lecturer in politics at Monash University. He says the sympathy we're seeing right now for Miss Berejiklian is a result of the goodwill she's built up leading New South Wales through the pandemic.
What I think the response to Gladys Berejiklian is now showing is that the COVID dynamic is translating into people's response to the investigation over corruption. The idea is that there was such great support for her in the community that it's not really affecting how people are now seeing her, and now that she has resigned under the circumstances.
And politicians are capitalising on this goodwill to suit their own purposes. It's become a bit of a trend to stan Pollies on TikTok right now, like Victorians getting weirdly attached to Dan Andrews' North Face jacket, or West Australians posting thirst traps for Daddy Mark.
I think you have a little crush on me.
Ew, no.
Yeah, I think you do.
There's even an Instagram page dedicated to transforming our leaders into hotter versions of themselves. Right now, the federal government is trying to sort out a model for a national anti-corruption body. But the proposal they've put forward has been criticised for not being tough enough. And heaps of federal pollies have come out against the tougher New South Wales model, which has taken down Ms Berejiklian and some of her predecessors. This is what Prime Minister Scott Morrison had to say about it on Channel 7 today.
There are millions of people who've seen what's happened to Gladys Berejiklian and will understand that that's a pretty good call not to follow that model.
So does this huge outpouring of support mean we don't care about potential corruption?
Oh, no, I do think young people care about corruption, and I'm sure the broader community cares about corruption. But in this climate, it was about her leadership and about her government. And that, I suspect, is what more people are thinking about now, as to that is now gone.
Dr. Gazarian says if we weren't dealing with COVID right now, Ms Berejiklian's resignation would have gone down very differently.
We've seen those letters, we've seen those good wish posters plastered on her electoral office. There's been an extraordinary response, which I suspect we would not see had this occurred outside of a pandemic.
Hack on Triple J.
Meghna Bali with that story. I have to agree with her. I was pretty confronted when I saw that TikTok of Gladys Berejiklian dancing in a club. It was a lot. People putting a lot of effort into this and a lot of people texting as well. The people standing Gladys, do they forget how much she hates koalas and music festivals, says one texter. Another person, I didn't know who Dan was till the pandemic. Now I love him. Someone else, lol, what a Gladys simp. She led in a cruise ship riddled with COVID. Actually, there was a finding that the federal border force was responsible for that situation. But look, a lot of people seeing past some of the concerns around her leadership and other state leaders as well. I want to know what you think. Have you been a massive stan of a politician, making TikToks about them, or generally really loving your state leader at the moment? 1-300-055-36, call in. Professor Nick Biddle has been studying how people feel towards politicians. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Let's start with Gladys Berejiklian, because she's, you know, being investigated for corruption. Meanwhile, people are fully stanning her on TikTok. Why are young people reacting in this way?
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple of kind of facets to it. One is that, I mean, people don't really like to see people who they have some connection with having a, you know, quite a bad time of it, really. So leaving aside people's views on Gladys's politics or the policies of the New South Wales government, I think in general people have somewhat of a rapport with Gladys Berejiklian, and I think that for that reason, more sympathy than would normally be the case when a politician has to resign for, let's face it, a pretty serious allegation.
Is there that much concern around corruption in particular? Because obviously Gladys Berejiklian's being investigated for that, but we've seen that with so many different politicians, federal politicians being accused of various corrupt activities, getting back in the ministry and so on. I mean, do we as a public actually care about these things anymore?
Yeah, look, I think people weigh up a whole bunch of things when they're making decisions about first who they're going to vote for, and just more broadly, how confident or how much they trust a politician. And clearly, people would rather if their representatives weren't accused of corruption, or if they didn't have such negative, findings from kind of independent bodies. But at the same time, people do make a judgment over a range of characteristics. And also, we need to recognise that how people view what's happening to a leader of a political party is influenced by their views on that party prior to any corruption allegation or any allegation, really. So people kind of view things through the prism of their existing political views.
Ryan in Wonthagi has texted, every time we speak about Dan Andrews at work, he's referred to as Daddy Dan. It is pretty interesting, the kind of TikToks that have come up around state leaders. They're pretty funny, but they're kind of intense as well, Nick. I mean, why do you think it is young people are using platforms on social media to express this kind of intense love for state leaders when there is a lot to talk about on social media, right?
Yeah, look, I think it's not just love for their state leaders. I think you'll also find some pretty harsh critiques of their state leaders on online. I guess it's just a form of expression which is of relevance to young people. And I don't think that there's any necessarily greater feelings or more positive feelings towards state leaders amongst young Australians. And actually, our data suggests that at least during the pandemic period, the confidence in state leaders and also federal leaders has stayed lower for young people than it has for older Australians. So I think actually the data suggests that young Australians are less positive towards their state leaders relative to the rest of the Australian population than perhaps they were pre-pandemic. And you can understand why. If you look at who has been impacted by many of the pandemic policies negatively, it has been young Australians. I mean, most of the social distancing restrictions in terms of the labour market have impacted on young Australians. So I think it's more obvious, I guess, because in terms of the both positive and negative views, because these are the platforms which young Australians are using. But I also think that in general, young Australians have not necessarily warmed to their state leaders as much as the rest of the population might have.
Andrew in Perth has texted, she's potentially corrupt. What is wrong with people? The people of New South Wales should be glad to be rid of politicians who do that kind of thing. Someone else has said, Georgia has texted, surely people are just gravitating to people who make them feel safe. Just quickly before we go, Nick, what do you think will happen after the pandemic? Because that has obviously led to some of this kind of connection people feel to state leaders especially. But will we be able to hold them to account when they are scrutinised for some pretty serious concerns?
Yeah, look, I think there's evidence both in prior crises in Australia and also internationally that once a crisis is over, then more normal business resumes. And I think the kind of rally around the flag effect, which we've seen with confidence in leaders during the pandemic, will probably dissipate and we'll get back to making fun of our leaders like we have for a couple hundred years.
All right, Nick Biddle, thanks so much for chatting through all of that with us. Professor Nick Biddle has been studying this area for a really long time.
Pack. If they don't have secure educational opportunities, the chances of reoffending are extremely high.
On Triple J.
You are listening to Hack. My name's Avani Dias, and there is so much onus on sending people to prison when they do something wrong. But what happens once they're out? So in Tasmania, teenagers who are found guilty of crimes are sent to the Ashley Youth Detention Centre in the state's north. But there are massive concerns about what happens to them once they're released, with heaps ending up back in custody without proper housing or support. It's a common problem all over the country, as April McLennan reports.
I was very institutionalised, so I didn't, like, I'd come out, I wouldn't like it, wouldn't enjoy it, wouldn't like people, wouldn't like being around things, didn't have access to food, didn't have access to shelter, so just everything on the outside was an anxious battle. I'd go to Ashley and I'd be relieved.
That's James, which isn't his real name. He's talking about Ashley Youth Detention Centre in Tassie. For him, it felt kind of safe, like a second home.
Even my partner said that I wouldn't cry, I wouldn't be upset. I'd get upset that I was leaving my partner, but I wouldn't get upset about the situation because I knew I was going in there to her food, I was going in there to a routine, I was going in there to family as such.
Since he was 11, he's been to Ashley 26 times.
I went to school, I ate their tea every night. There was always sort of a stability in my life to a certain extent. And then once Mum passed away, I sort of rebelled a little bit, started sort of springing out, going into doing crime, hanging around with the wrong types of crowds. I'd be, yeah, I'm on the way to Risdon, I'm gonna go be the king of Risdon. That was my anticipation. I wanted to be like Carl Williams.
James has been out for about 2 years now, but he's only had stable accommodation for the last 3 months.
Something clicked and I just sort of went, well, I don't want to be this person. And I started making effort to change. And I asked and I asked and I was in the office probably every week to two, like, you know, I need a house, I'm homeless, I've just come out of here, I'm trying to change. Look, I've been out a month now, I've been out 2 months, now three, now half a year, now a year. You know, isn't that enough proof?
The Department of Communities says all residents leaving Ashley actually do have accommodation options, and around three quarters of young people leaving go back to their family. There's also supported accommodation options on offer, but advocates say the system isn't working and heaps of kids fall through the cracks.
What sort of society are we in where a young person, a person in their teens, thinks that it's better to be in a detention centre than living in the community? That is demonstration of what I've been talking about, the lack of structured, long-term, well-resourced, hands-on support for very vulnerable young people.
That's Greg Barnes. He's the Tasmanian chair of the Prisoners Legal Service. He says Tassie's got a bad record when it comes to supporting young people.
And all the evidence shows that for young people, if they don't have secure housing, if they don't have secure educational opportunities and also particularly mental health support services, the chances of reoffending are extremely high. Because unless you give people basic fundamental supports and structures in their lives, the move back into the antisocial world is just so much easier.
The Tasmanian government's putting $4.3 million towards housing for 16 to 24-year-olds, which includes people transitioning out of Ashley. Deputy Secretary of Housing, Disability and Community Services, Peter White, says he's really keen to get young people into stable accommodation.
Well, I think what we're seeing with young people is that where they don't have access to this sort of housing, it can create some issues for them in terms of their ability, for example, to get a good education and to find employment, etc. So it's very important for young people to have some form of stable housing, whether that's with their family, whether that's with friends, or in some cases where they may have the need for more independent living arrangements.
Some people reckon the closure of the centre by 2025 is a good opportunity to redesign youth detention in Tassie. But James says the young people currently in Ashley can't afford to wait for better rehousing options, and he thinks the government should make changes now.
I should have had a nice quiet place to be able to sort of sit down and reflect and figure stuff out for my next period of my life. But I was trying to sort out housing, money, food, my partner's safety also. I was trying to sort out all these other things. I didn't really have time to work on myself, but I had to find it, otherwise I knew it was going to lead back to incarceration.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting there from Tasmania. You are listening to Hack. Let's talk about climate change.
Hack.
The Prime Minister should attend the Glasgow conference. If he doesn't, it's because he's embarrassed about Australia's position.
On Triple J.
All right, think about the stuff you use in your day-to-day life, like your stove, your car, a heater or aircon, and above all, your house's electricity. So if all of us made those things electric, plus anything else in the country that could be electrified, then Australia would cut its emissions by 80% by 2035, according to some estimates. Today, reporters found that'll also save the average household $5,000 on power and car costs. Text me, have you tried to electrify your life to reduce emissions? 0439 757 555. Joe Lauder reports.
Burning gas to do anything is always going to be greenhouse gas emissions. That was probably the primary motivation.
This is Leon. He lives in Canberra and he recently replaced his old gas heating system with an electric one as part of a bigger transition away from gas.
Oh, partly it was the age of the appliance that, it, you know, we knew it was likely to not last much longer, but we're also keen to do, you know, the bits that we reasonably can for the environment and get away from greenhouse gas emissions.
And all that leaves is a gas stove, which Leon is hoping to replace with an electric one soon.
Well, we do like cooking with gas. I'm also hearing pretty good things about cooking with induction or even, you know, ceramic.
According to a report out today, our homes are responsible for about 42% of Australia's emissions, including the electricity they use and cars. One way to get that figure to zero as fast as possible is to swap out all the appliances that run off gas with electric ones. So that's gas heaters, hot water systems, and gas cooking appliances. They make up about 3% of our national emissions. The next step is to power all our homes with renewable energy, which can be done using rooftop solar. But replacing all those gas appliances is expensive.
That doesn't mean you go and throw away all that relatively new appliances. And I think that the appliance changeover is going to be one of the big issues we have to grapple with.
That's the Grattan Institute's Director of Energy and Climate Change, Tony Wood. This issue is tricky where I am in Victoria. It uses lots of gas for heating because it's cold, and household gas makes up about 16% of the state's total emissions. Tony says we need to start this changeover in our homes now. And he says governments need to be doing a lot more to make this transition smooth, so it's not a mad scramble to replace everyone's gas appliances in a decade to hit our climate targets.
This move away from gas is going to require very good communications from government, from the energy industry and so forth, to give people the understanding and the support why we need to do this. And it's not tonight, it's not tomorrow.
So what are the alternatives? For heating, there are heat pumps, aka reverse cycle air conditioners, and there are electric hot water systems. For cooking, there are what's called induction cooktops that use magnetic technology. These electric cooktops have come a long way from those shitty old coil stoves, according to the Grattan Institute's Tony Wood.
They're more efficient, they're cheaper, and they're easier to use. Again, there are alternatives too. Gas already.
Tony says this part of the shift away from fossil fuels is a lot more personal for us.
When people are thinking about the fact that the gas we're burning is a greenhouse gas and it's contributing to climate change, we're the ones who are doing it in our homes. It's not one of those big coal-fired power stations who's doing it.
Leon's main motivation has been doing his bit to reduce carbon emissions, but that's not the only reason.
There's also some, you know, health benefits to avoiding having combustion inside the house with the gases that are not so good for the respiratory system.
It's true, gas isn't just a fossil fuel that contributes to climate change. There's another downside to burning it in your home.
Burning gas produces a whole range of air pollutants, including the two that we're most concerned about are PM2.5 and nitrogen dioxide. Both of those air pollutants are strongly linked with childhood asthma.
Dr. Kate Charlesworth is a medical doctor and a health expert at the Climate Council. She's also the author of a report that they released in May about the health impacts of gas.
And one of the important findings was that cooking with gas in the home is responsible for up to 12% of the childhood asthma burden in Australia.
For a long time, gas has been seen as the best option for cooking. People really love it, and hey, I'm the same. I've been looking at rentals at the moment, and you can see so many places that have gas cooktop listed as a feature of the house. But Dr. Charlesworth says it's doing harm.
Because, you know, half of Australian households use gas for cooking. It's a really important and sort of ubiquitous exposure factor. For a child with gas cooking at home, they actually face a comparable risk of asthma to a child living with household cigarette smoke. You know, gas is a fossil fuel, and fossil fuels are driving extreme weather such as black summers and heat waves and floods, you know. So there's a very clear case, you know, we need to be very clearly reducing our emissions.
Hack on Triple J.
Joe Lauder with that story. Let's talk to Dr. Saul Griffith now. So he's an investor, he's an entrepreneur, and he's been advising the US President Joe Biden's administration on how they can electrify everything. He thinks we can do it in Australia as well. And Saul has just released a report into this issue today and how much we'd save. Thanks for joining us on Triple J.
Thank you.
So you've written this report finding Australian households could save a lot of money and get cheaper electricity bills and cut emissions at the same time by electrifying everything. How could day-to-day people do that?
So the recipe is pretty simple. We all live in a household, and most of those households have one or two cars associated with them, so we need to electrify those cars. Most of them have a roof where we should be putting some solar. They'll have a hot water system that we need to switch from natural gas to electric. And many of them will have heating systems that are driven by natural gas. And so we need to electrify those heating systems with heat pumps. And then we also have kitchens that run on natural gas in a lot of Australia, and we need to also convert those with induction to electric.
This sounds like a pretty expensive thing for someone in their own house to do. Is that putting too much onus on people to front up a lot of money to kind of transition their homes away from gas?
I think there's a really important point to be made. Even for a wealthy home, it's an expensive proposition today. And in fact, in the details of the report, you can see. So if you went out and you paid retail for that set of goodies in 2021, it'll probably increase your price of having cars and all of those energy services by about $5,000 a year. The real point of the report is we can now see, because we can see the technology trends on the cost of electric vehicles, we can see where the price of solar is going, where the price of batteries are going, where the price and performance of induction cooking and heat pump heating is going, that by 2023 or 2024, if you can finance those items and bring them into your life by 2030, end of the decade, every household would actually save about $5,000 a year. But I think the real point you're driving at is there's an expensive upfront cost to buying these goodies. And so I think that's where there's a role for government and the private sector to play in helping finance these things so that everyone can afford it.
Totally. So how do you expect that governments should, I guess, subsidise some of these transitions for everyday Australians?
No one's put the package together yet in a single house, really, let alone in a whole suburb. And so there's sort of a race to figure out the right set of policies to make it affordable, to build the workforce so there's enough tradies that can do all the work, because most of this work will go to tradies because it's retrofits. It'll happen with your renovations or when you move house. And so we need to start building that capacity now so that Australia can be reaping those savings and those benefits later in this decade.
Obviously, a lot of this rides on governments taking a lot of action, and, you know, there's been a lot of scrutiny on Scott Morrison's government and its, I guess, lack of action in this space. I mean, just today, it's approved a third new coal project in a month, and we're just a few weeks away from the climate change conference in Glasgow. I mean, the big question here is there any incentive, or have you got any indication from the Australian government that it's keen to actually take on some of these costs and some of these policies?
My radical 19-year-old Triple J self, which still exists, would like the Australian government to go to Glasgow and say, you know what, world, we're going to show you how to do it. We're going to decarbonise our whole domestic economy by 2030. We know how to do that. We're going to build that on the back of the Australian solar miracle. We've got the cheapest electricity in the world delivered to the consumer is Australian rooftop solar. We're going to run similar programs to decarbonize our heating systems by using heat pumps as a substitute for natural gas in our homes. It'll also improve the health of all of our children. And given that we're a nation that imports all of our petrol and diesel, which is a $30 billion a year loss to the economy, we're going to electrify our car fleet instead, and we're going to run it on Australian solar. That's the recipe for decarbonising our domestic economy. We'll do it by 2030, and we hope the rest of the world matches us. And then he should go on to say something like, Australia is enormously lucky and can produce so much renewable energy that we will be able to make green steel, green aluminium, green metals, even green hydrogen and green ammonia, and we will be exporting that to the rest of the world to help them meet their climate commitments in the decades after 2030. That is a believable, achievable vision for Australia on climate. If any serious economist would like to sit down and go over the numbers, I think it works out that this would be the best possible path for the Australian economy. So there's honestly a government not signing up for a plan like that is actually costing the Australian economy and denying our youth a verdant future. So I think we need to rise up and we need to ask for that in a very ambitious thing. We should be demanding that that's what we take to Glasgow as a national climate commitment.
Hack on Triple J.
That is Dr. Saul Griffith, who is an inventor. He's an entrepreneur. He's also been advising the US and now Australian governments on how to electrify everything to reduce carbon emissions. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I'll catch you next time.